You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where
I live. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Scoop. Sam Claiborne,
hey,
and clearly Canadian, the traitor, CJ Gibson.
Good.
Final show.
What's up?
Wait, can you come back on the show in a couple weeks?
Or maybe next week, I think. But yeah.
CJ says he has something planned.
Oh. For this show?
Yeah, for next week.
For next week. Yeah, okay. For next week.
What is it?
If it works out, well, I can't say. You guys are all here, right? Nobody's going to Gamescom here.
None of us are going to Gamescom.
There we go. Well, then it can happen.
Okay, right, so we'll see.
We'll do it.
What we were just mentioning, you may have seen on Twitter, CJ posted he's leaving IGN.
Yes, it's so when I actually posted on Twitter, now it feels very real.
Everybody's now it feels weird.
It does. You know, you have that tunnel vision where when you do something, you're like, okay, I can't take this back now. And again, being a fan of IGN for a lot of years and being involved since 2006, it was very surreal, but I appreciate all the comments. And yeah, still setting in. Pretty crazy.
Moving up to Seattle, slowly and steadily making your way back to your homeland.
Potentially. That's the
that's the real goal.
That's always the dream. That's the goal. So yeah, a lot of that stuff, I mean, we're figuring out, but definitely more to announce next week on the show.
Okay. Yeah. And I know it's, you know, everyone, we always say, you know, we're sad to see you go, but we wish you the best. I'm actually really mad at CJ. I don't wish him the best at all.
That's fair.
Not even hiding.
That's been the sentiment. I will say, just being on the show the last, you know, how many months, and I am, you know, again, having these moments where I'm just going like, oh, at IGN, there's been so many great times, but I've probably laughed the hardest on this show. And it's usually because of Sam's immature, childish nature that I appreciate.
I don't understand why you're telling us this week. What are you going to say next week?
It's all
am I
going
to be
right
greater
now,
and you get to tell me even greater things?
It depends
week?
How this episode goes.
It's been fun cracking you up, CJ.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it's really, really good having you on the show.
But the point is not to crack you up. The point is to win 20 questions, and I can't emphasize that enough.
I think we've established that I, by far, am the worst 20 questions player of all time.
No,
but
you're not.
The record is actually okay. I feel like I help in the earlier areas. So.
I forgot the most important part of our show, the August 1994 issue of EGM.
Oh.
I have to go and get it.
There you go. Okay.
I'd like to send CJ to go and get it.
Yeah, I feel like...
It's on my desk.
It's on your desk? Okay, yeah. Do you want me to go get it?
Yeah.
As a producer, I'm going to go get it. You guys vamp. We'll be right
back. Thank you, CJ.
Do you know where Damon sits?
I think I do.
Okay.
I'll find out.
It's got Super Return of the Jedi on the cover.
Oh, sweet.
But we're not going to vamp. We're just going to go.
No, we got to go because we're going to have a little bit of a truncated episode this week. This week has gotten away from us. I posted this in the Facebook group yesterday, but when we were about to record GameScoop, the door to this studio decided to lock itself No one could get inside. And in fact, one of our producers, Brian Malkowitz, was trapped inside for about 30 minutes. We had to call a repairman to come and
my favorite thing
remove
about that,
the door.
So I was chatting with Malkowitz about a work project, and he's like, oh, I can't get to that right now. I'm stuck in the studio. And I'm like, oh, there's a shoot running long or something. Yep. But no, he was literally trapped in the studio, which I did not find out until
I'm looking for escape routes. Do you think you could climb up and over any part of this?
Anne, who sits on the other side of that wall, says she can hear us when we're recording this show. So maybe that through that way is our escape route.
Well, I know she's a big fan, too. So.
She's a big fan.
Tap the parts of the wall, find the hollow parts.
Shout out to the person in the comments on my post on Facebook who said Brian, he must just not have killed all the enemies in the room.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes, too, it's just like, you just have to restart that room because something you didn't trigger, the game doesn't know, and then you have to...
Malkowitz, are you still hearing the combat music?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're going to dive into that issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly in a little bit. But first, let's talk about one of our absolute favorite topics here on GameScoop, Nintendo Entertainment System cartridges.
Nice.
Naturally.
One of the most expensive
talking about this. This is a Seattle story.
Ooh.
Related to CJ's future.
We're actually talking about a used game store in Seattle, which I guess we can say now, that's where CJ's going to work.
Yeah. A used game store.
That would be so cool.
Heard it here first.
A really good position Scoop. For an associate manager.
Exclusive.
Stop opened up.
CJ, what's the going rate of Super R-Type? Loose.
Let me check the magazine here. No.
Worn labels.
He can't even make a joke about it. He has no idea.
I would say $10.
That's it.
That's pretty generous.
Loose.
Okay.
Just the cartridge.
The reason we're talking about NES carts is a very rare NES cart was traded into a used game store in Seattle. Last week, I guess.
Yeah, this week. Just a couple of days ago. And then it was immediately resold because the market is so hot right now. But the Nintendo World Championship cartridge, like ships cartridge, we get to report on this frequently because it's just like it's very popular with our audience, which is cool because it's like a notable holy grail of collecting. That, and I would say, stadium events, that's a really rare NES game, and stuff like that. There's been a lot of talk recently, too, about a Super Mario Brothers cartridge that went for $100,000 recently, too, which is silly. And the reason that that's happening is that there's just the video game collecting market is just exploding right now. And it has, always gone, games have been going up in value for a while, but now it's really hot. And the reason why people want this game is that it's a Nintendo issued, gray or gold cartridge. And there's only so many of those. There's only, 600 and change NES games that you can call officially released. So if you want that full library, you have to have this game. It's like a silly collector's thing mentality. I have it, of course. To have the full swath, right? And then you can add in I also have all the bootlegs and I have all the in boxes and manuals and everything, but to have the full cartridge collection, you would need to have this technically.
To me, I think my favorite thing about this story is that the person trading it in didn't know. Just thought that they're gonna get $5 or $10 for this NES collection, and it turns out they had something worth over $10,000 and they had no idea.
So they brought in a bag of games from the NES era and Nintendo 64 games. And the buyer, Cody, who I interviewed for the story, and released also a great just recounting of it on his YouTube channel, DS Koopa. But you can check that out. But he told the story, and it's really cute. The guy brought it in, and he just had to say, "Are you pranking me?"
Yeah.
I just need to ask, are you pranking me? Is this a camera thing or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, the guy who wasn't pranking him was like, "Yeah. What's going on?
Are you pranking me?"
So then they're just both probably thinking who's pranking who here?
That's awesome.
But then he said "Hey, I think you have something really valuable." And then just went through the whole thing. "I'm going to research it real quick and give you a price." And he gave him, now that price is public. He bought it from that guy for $13,000.
Wow.
And it's probably, you can see the labels off a little bit. And it's just it was in a bag of games with third party Nintendo 64 games. And
how did that guy get it? He didn't know what he had. How did he get it?
He said he used to just buy groups of NES games, which was kind of amassing them. But here's the thing about the Nintendo World Championships cartridge, is that we, for a long time, would repeat the untruth that it was only available to contest winners and for also a contest in Nintendo Power.
Yeah, there's different version.
This apparently a bunch of those copies are out there because we know Howard Phillips, who was a Nintendo employee at the time, has some. he had like multiple ones. And then there's just like other ones that Nintendo, I think, just kept and gave to employees eventually because they ran a bunch of contests with this cartridge, like all over the place. So like they didn't just give them all away. They gave away a certain number of them. And now we know serial numbers are higher than the 100, you know, in 16 that we originally thought. So he the one he brought in was serial number 302. Like it probably indicates that that just came out of Nintendo, you know, headquarters at some point, went into somebody's house, went into a box of games, went to a Goodwill, went to him.
And then it's also known that they've already sold it to someone.
It is known.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. So it was sold the next day. Like the guy that it was sold to had come into the store the previous day and bought some like rares, some like really expensive games, and had a good rapport for that reason, right? Mm-hmm. So they had they said they had just like tons of offers right away as soon as they tweeted that out. And he came in and it was in person and was able to say like, oh, I'm a, you know, it's funny to tell this story because I just heard somebody tell this and then reported
awesome,
on it.
Though.
But so you should definitely read, you know, my reporting, please, and then also check out Cody's video. But yeah, he said that you know that they just sold it to that guy because he had a good repute with them. Yeah,
that's the part that gets me is like if you find out that you have something that's worth over $10,000 and someone behind the counter says I'll give you $13,000 for it right now, how are you like yeah sure instead of being like meh. I'm going to take a sec.
He did. He said he really walked him through it. He's like, this is worth, from what I can tell, $15,000 to $20,000 in good condition. And here's a really, you know, good condition means this and this and this. So you have to take condition into account.
Did they try it out? Like, did they try to?
Yeah, Cody at Pink Girl did try it. He got to play it. And he said only the second, you have to plug in the second controller to make it work. And he was like really confused by that. Because I think it was in like a kind of a component to have this contest on. Like it wasn't in like an NES and just like on a television. I think it was in like a custom console.
Right. Have you ever played?
It switches on. It's a weird
cartridge. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Have you ever played one of those? Like I was actually saying this to Damon. I think they had a Star Fox one and I actually played a Star Fox competition.
Craig Harris owns one of those and would bring it into the office so we could mess with it, which was really cool. It's like one level and that is completely new. The Nintendo World Championships cartridge, we had a knockoff of it that we did a contest here in the office and once. And then since then, Steve Lin, who actually was also interviewed for the story part of the video game history museum stuff that I quoted in there, he has two of them. He has the gray one and the gold one. And we did a video. I embedded it in my story. You can check that out. It's really cool. And so I've held them, but his are in like nice cased plastic or whatever and graded probably. Those are the ones that are, I think his copies have appeared at E3 and like in the video game history museum stuff there, which is a different foundation. He's part of the video game history foundation, which is different. But those things are, he has really nice copies of them. And he knows who won them too.
Did you go over the games that are on the cart?
Yeah, it's Rad Racer, Super Mario Brothers, and Tetris. And really the point is to like get through the Rad Racer level because you don't score very much in it. And then get 100 coins in Mario, which is a different way to play Mario. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, you probably want to take that pipe down right
at
the beginning. Get all those coins. And then then Tetris is really, I think, where you score. So I think if you're good at Tetris, you kick butt.
So I competed in the Nintendo World Championships.
That's crazy. Nice.
And
I hadn't heard that story.
I made it to the semifinals in Kansas City.
Wow.
But in my memory, I played Mario Brothers, Tetris, and The Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. So that throws me off.
So all the qualification rounds and stuff are all over the place. Like I saw on the comments on the story, like, oh, I did that, and I did really good at, like, somebody said, I can't remember, it was Goonies 2 or something. I was like, what? That was part of it? Like, it's just something really weird. And I think they just had, like, different types of qualification stuff. Yeah. But this was, like, a way to, you know, determine winners in the final round or whatever.
Yeah, and they also might have done it more than once. Like, I think this card's from 1990. Mm-hmm. Maybe I went in 91. I don't really remember, but I went some year.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was the same with my situation. I went there and we played Star Fox. It was the first level. You had to get whatever score. They allowed you, I think, to wait in line and play a couple times. But I now know how to get 100% in the first level, and it has something to do with like taking out all the enemies that are flying through the little areas, and you have to go through all the pylon things.
You have to go through sideways.
You have to like not use bombs, or you have to kill the boss in a certain amount of time. So I got like a 90 or a 95, I think, and then I could never get the 100 when I did it. And then when Star Fox came out, I was like, okay, well now it's like.
So you hadn't played Star Fox yet?
No, it was the first time I'd play Star Fox, and it was crazy because like, oh, Super FX chip, and I can't remember if that game was actually out prior to Mario Kart, or if it was one of the first like Super FX chips games. So, but it was super cool. I mean, just even the music and the way you felt for playing a game like that. I don't know if I'd played another game, especially on console, that felt the way Star Fox did. Like, it doesn't really hold up now in a way, but at the time, it was awesome. It was
the
really
World
cool.
Championships carts are like, I know they're out there and they change hands all the times. And like, people were kind of asking, like, why is this news? Well, it's news because it's cool to explain and people were really interested in it. Like, seriously, it was our most popular story this week. But besides that, it's also, they don't come into game stores. They don't show up in the wild because so many of them have been tracked down. They always change hands privately, and that's what happened in the second transaction here. Yeah. So the fact that we have like an on the record like price point is like important, and there's a few eBay ones, but it's just really hard to like nail that stuff down. So I think that's what was really cool about this, and that it was like a human interest story. Like Cody and then Kelsey Lewin, who also works at Pink Gorilla and is part of the same foundation that Steve Lin is, like, those are people involved in, like, you know, game history and research and stuff, and just to have this fall into their laps is like really cool.
Yeah. I'd love to know what that guy actually bought after. Shows up, hey, cool, 10 or whatever it is. All right, what you know, I thought I was gonna get $5.
Yeah.
What do we get after?
Or what would you have gotten in trade?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just take store credit.
Yeah, store credit, and then you just like, all right, back up the truck. We're cleaning you out.
Sam, it looks like loose copies of Super R-Type are going on eBay from $8 to $13.
Mm. Ooh.
Complete in box, though.
I completely nailed it.
Complete in box, though.
No.
It's going to set you back $35.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. CIB.
Damon, I think they made a movie based off your experience competing in the Nintendo World.
Yeah, it's called The Wizard. Yeah.
California.
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
Played me.
I thought that you were the kid with the power glove.
No. Oh. I was the brother.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What's that start sound?
Let's get some more volume on that.
Yeah.
There it is.
Aww. That's what you heard when you began a round of Life Force.
Oh, there you go.
I was going to guess Gradius. And then Stinger, which are both Konami games.
They might have the same exact sound in all three of those games. Mm-hmm. Here we go. August 1994. I don't know if they had a Nintendo World Championships that year, but on the cover of EGM was Super Return of the Jedi. They had an exclusive on it. How relevant was Return of the Jedi and Star Wars in 94?
It was probably the most, you know, the least relevant era for Star Wars. Yeah. Like, I remember in like 1996, before the remakes came out, like, Star Wars was just wasn't that cool.
I know.
And there wasn't a lot out for it. It's really funny.
Like, I don't think me and my friends had even like started to sort of like surface our nostalgia for Star Wars yet.
Exactly.
It wasn't until like the later 90s when we started about, man, remember how cool Star Wars was?
I had some friends that like totally got into that, and we like bought some like vintage Star Wars stuff, and it was like really cool at the time. And
yeah,
it's totally been ruined.
So, all right, diving into this issue, what I like, there's a very confusing photo right at the very beginning, a 2-page spread. It's just a photo of Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies.
Nice.
It says, buckle up, but there's no... Yeah.
And then just EGM.
There's no indication
and
of why,
just the masthead?
Why this is in there. It doesn't say True Lies. It doesn't say Arnold Schwarzenegger. It just says, buckle up.
So, like, you gloss over that stuff as a kid, knowing what I know now about how these magazines were made.
Yeah.
Like, that magazine was going to print the next morning, and they were like, we got 2 pages we have to fill.
We've got this new Arnold Schwarzenegger movie coming out.
Just put Arnold in it. Doesn't matter.
Okay, now, you know how when we revisit magazines from this era, it's just Street Fighter II all the time.
Every issue
is just Street Fighter II. All the letters are about Street Fighter II.
And some of the letters are like, why is your magazine only about Street Fighter II? Remember that one?
August 94, the letter from the editor is headlined, No More Street Fighter II.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
They've heard the cries of the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it an ironic letter?
No. So he says, this is Ed Simrad, editor of EGM. He says, we received our finished copy of Super Street Fighter II just the other day. And of course, everybody in the office gathered around waiting for the turn to play. After a couple of hours, the crowd cleared and the game just sat there. Noticing that, I asked everybody what they thought about the new version. The consensus was that it was okay, but it was just another version of Street Fighter II. Granted, is the best Street Fighter II to date, but considering that it is the third time Capcom is redoing the game, they expected perfection. The question I have is, do we really need another revised and improved Street Fighter II? Judging by our staff's opinions, in addition to the tons of letters we have already received from our readers, the answer seems to be no. Granted, if you are a street fighting fanatic, you will go out and buy the cart no matter what anybody says. But if you are an average player, you probably will be very disappointed after you play it for a while. At best, I recommend that you rent it, try the new characters, and then decide if you want to spend the $70 to $80.
Ooh.
Why was it so expensive?
Hearts, man.
That's what they were, yeah.
I think I paid like $80 for Mortal Kombat on the N64.
Oh, absolutely. And even then, like, I remember buying all those. Like, I love them. And I played Street Fighter in the arcade so much. The Nintendo version was better, and obviously
it became such a meme and joke.
Yeah.
For Capcom at the time would never count to three; they would never release Street Fighter III.
Yeah, there's multiple versions.
Wait, what was different about this version?
It had the four new characters.
Yeah, and then you could change the speed. It was like Balrog, Sagat,
but there would have been
that was different. That was Championship Edition.
Right.
Super had what's his name?
Like
the Native American character.
And, yeah,
they already added T-Hawk those.
I think so. Yeah, and then Cammy and a few others. Yeah.
So he spent some time lamenting sequelitis in the industry. He says, it's not just Capcom that does a lot of sequels. One can't forget EA's long list of Madden or NHL games, or check any game list and look at the games with numbers in the titles. There are quite a few. Gaming magazines are also guilty of perpetuating the sequel phenomenon. If you look at
25 years ago.
I know. If you look at all the reviews of Super Street Fighter II, you'll see a lot of smiling faces or near-perfect numerical evaluations. I believe that these reviewers are missing the point of what a review is all about. Games aren't cheap, and kids have to save up quite a while to get enough money for the next cart.
Yeah,
truth.
We make that point a lot.
I don't want to be the one who gives a 98 to a game which has a playtime of less than one day before it is shelved because the player found out too late that the game is not much more than a cosmetic update of a game he already has.
Wow.
But there has to be a better method of game evaluation.
Ed, you are a gaming magazine.
So he says, where do we stand? In our reviews, we're going to start taking into account this type of excessive game program repetition and sequels. It's not an easy task. It is going to be subjective at first. Our goal is to take the average player into consideration, the one who already has Street Fighter II Turbo or a Madden 94. Blah, blah, blah. But I just think it's interesting that they're addressing this. And then they review Super Street Fighter II in this issue, and we'll see how that...
It's a pretty thorny issue. It's like Street Fighter II, one of the greatest games of all time. Super Street Fighter II is a better version of it.
It's the same price.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know how to score something like that. Yeah. Still would be today.
Here in the letters to the editor, there's a great letter from a reader in New Mexico. His name is Ian, and his letter is called Nintendo Manifesto. His letter reads, "What is this? You are always putting Sega down. Why is this? I'm really ticked off. Every Genesis game usually gets poor ratings. I saw the ratings for World Series Baseball, 8-7, 8-7-6. That really got me mad. It should have at least gotten straight eights. But do you really want to know what makes me mad? The ad for the Super NES smashing. It asks which system has a European porcupine for a mascot. What in the hell kind of question is that? that porcupine could rip Mario to shreds. And the ratings for Street Fighter II Championship Edition for Genesis are all wrong. My brother has the game, and just because it doesn't have the color and sound the Super NES has, doesn't mean it's a bad game.
Yes, it does.
That ticks me off. The control is excellent, and the moves are easy to do. And unlike the Super NES, you don't have to do a trick to get 10 stars, and it has a group battle. And every kid I know has a Genesis. And at least Genesis has a rating system and blood on their games instead of sweat, there like on the Super NES. The sales are 63% Sega, 37% NES.
Oh, wow.
Oh, in issue 58, the new Game Boy is a stupid idea. Because if you own a different system besides Super NES, how is it going to work? I own a Genesis and a Game Boy, and I will not spend more money to go and buy a Super NES and a new Game Boy. And which system has a CD? Genesis. I'm sorry, but Genesis is the better system. Oh, and do you know when Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo is supposed to be out?
I can't believe you found my letter.
Man, that guy really wanted the internet to
be invented.
Did
they answer his question?
That's crazy.
They have a pretty long, lengthy answer.
I just want to know about his final question.
It could have been, Street Fighter 2, I don't know.
I love how basically in the middle of it, he actually just denounces everything that he's typing up. It doesn't matter if the color is not as good and the sound is bad and all this other stuff. And you're like, what? No. You're actually explaining why. Yeah. Do you realize that?
On the next page, we have an ad for something called the Video Jukebox VJ.
Whoa.
It's like this system where you can hook it up to your Sega Genesis and then plug a bunch of carts in it, and then you can just switch between them. You don't have to unload each cart.
Nobody wanted
seen
that.
I've never seen this before.
The Genesis even has the jukebox VJ. Does the Super Nintendo have that? I don't think so. That ticks me off.
Yeah. The copy here says, this radical new technology utilizes nuclear radioactive electrolytic cell micronization covered with a silicon outer shell with a 6-cylinder overcam suspension. Huh? Just pulling your yank, man. The video jukebox, nicknamed the VJ, really uses a cranking computer-driven silicon-based ASIC that allows you to switch between 1 and 6 carts on the fly. But wait, there's more.
You can attach. I gotta switch to Sonic 2.
You can attach more than one VJ together to hold 12, 18, up to 36 carts.
Oh no!
But not more than 36. 37.
Can you imagine your friend with maybe a hyperactive disorder like getting a hold of that thing? I don't want to play this anymore. Bubsy.
Yeah.
I don't want to play this anymore. Air the Acrobat.
Yeah, it's just like having a bunch of free-to-play games on your phone.
I was waiting to hear the word blast processing in there. They forgot that one.
On this page, they were asking their readers to send in what-if scenarios. Like, what if... some of these are weird. Like, what if Nintendo made a CD-ROM? Mm-hmm. Was one of the suggestions. Mm. Some of these don't make sense to me.
Then I wouldn't be so ticked off.
What if Dalsim had to blow out a candle? What does that have to do with anything?
Because he only blows fire breath.
Oh.
So he would melt the candle and relight it.
The only thing I was thinking about was his long arms, and I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what is wrong with you guys?
I didn't remember the fire blowing.
No, I mean yoga flame, yoga fire. I mean, when he does.
Aaron from Pennsylvania says, "What if Goro rated video games? 4 thumbs up."
Do you guys get that one? It's because Goro
he blows fire. What if Steve from Tennessee?
On Nintendo, he blows sweat.
On the Genesis, he blows blood. What if Capcom made Street Fighter 2 for the 2600?
CJ's losing it.
I'm holding on. CJ's holding on, it. Sam. I'm just taking a deep breath.
Let's play some music for CJ to calm him down.
Okay.
Oh. Great.
Worked really well.
What?
You just glazed over.
What if Nintendo's... This is from Clay in Texas. What if Nintendo's game approval staff consisted of only mothers?
Don't drink the water, CJ.
I'm not gonna.
Wait till everybody's done speaking on this show until you drink that water.
These are so weird.
Okay, what did he say?
What if Nintendo's game approval staff consisted of only mothers?
Mm. Okay.
What if Guile wanted to marry Sonya and Chun-Li is jealous? What if, you guys...
Do you want me to explain that one?
The last one is, what if there was a game called RoboCop versus Stimpy?
Oh my gosh.
That would actually be the best thing ever, actually.
I just bought a bootleg. Scott Bromley and I went in this together. We bought a bootleg playfield and set that you convert a pinball machine from this game called High Speed, which is kind of boring, to a game called, I forget the name of it because it's German. And the game is RoboCop and Dragnet themed. It just has RoboCop on it and Dan Aykroyd from the 80s Dragnet movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
I can't wait to show it to you. That just occurred to me when you mentioned
it. Just because.
I think there's like none out there. This is going to be the only one. We're going to ruin a High Speed and make it into this.
Everyone,
High Speed's not bad.
High Speed 2, The Getaway is better though.
Yeah, it is.
After this episode, everyone should look up the music video for the theme to Dragnet called City of Crime. It features Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd rapping.
Ooh.
Great.
Can't wait.
Here's a letter from John in Connecticut. He says, I would like to let your readers know about my recent decision to part with all of my Nintendo hardware and software.
Oh, boy.
I'm an adult in my late 20s who has owned a Super NES system since it was originally released. I was satisfied with the games until Nintendo started up with their...
50 now.
I was satisfied with the games until Nintendo started up with their fascist censorship policy and began to butcher their games.
Whoa.
Nintendo's attitude of not caring...
This is about the sweat breath.
Mortal ...about what Kombat. The customer wants Absolutely. To see and still expecting us to run out and buy their toned-down rubbish irritates me immensely, to say the very least.
Why'd he sell his Sega games, too?
That alien... No, he just said...
Nintendo. The blood. Oh, they got the blood.
That alienation, along with the desire for better games, Great prompted game. Me to buy an Atari Jaguar.
Ooh.
Ouch.
I've owned Whoa. My Jag since it became available and have nothing but praise for the hardware and software.
All right.
I also feel good about seeing Made in the USA...
He types while sobbing.
Wait a second. He feels good about...
I feel good about seeing
he's
Made
lying.
In the USA
we
and
know
printed
lying.
In the USA on Atari products. Atari is not going to censor their games, and they now have a multitude of third-party vendors about to deliver a deluge of awesome games, including Wolfenstein 3D and Doom. Since I received my copy of Tempest 2000, I have sold all of my Nintendo carts, and the money from said sales will be going into a JAG CD-ROM system when it becomes available.
Oh, Ivan had this weird cart that was from the Nintendo World Championships that I sold.
Not wishing to propagate the Nintendo obscenity further than necessary, I destroyed my Super NES deck with a sledgehammer and left it outside to rust in pieces.
Oh my gosh.
To close this letter, I wish to state for the record, I will never give Nintendo another penny. Their Project Reality that is alleged to be in development is supposed to be cutting-edge hardware. Who cares? If you can't play the kind of games you want on it, the system is useless. Buy Atari. Quite simply, they are the best. And editor, why is EGM number 54 the only issue with the JAG on the top of your front cover? Better put it back to let people know you guys support the JAG.
Wow.
Okay, so was this the year that things turned?
Yeah.
Was this the year that negativity in video games started
for
happening?
Sure, absolutely.
Was everything okay until 1994?
No, I think it's good to remember that insane fanboys are not new to video games.
I mean, definitely, the Zelda Mario like thing for sure started in that Genesis area, but this is crazy.
The Nintendo censorship stuff was a big deal in the 90s.
Yeah,
they took out all the, like, you couldn't like go to a church in Dragon Quest. I think they changed it to like, you know, a hospital or something like that.
Even I think Bionic Commando, there's a couple other games that had censorship as well too, just because of, you know, the ending of those games. And
I
know that.
They took out the swastikas.
But that's my point. Yeah, they did a lot of that stuff. I mean,
there's an ad for Blockbuster. It says video games are like high tops.
Wait, what year is this?
94.
I don't know. Okay, keep going. I don't know when I remember Blockbuster is my point.
Video games are like high tops. The new ones are cool, but after a while, they start to stink.
All right.
So rent your games from Blockbuster is what they're...
That feels really early for Blockbuster. I don't know if
94?
I feel like... Because I remember high school just, you know... But I do remember them coming in and taking over other stores that were previous video game stores.
That's like the height of Blockbuster, I think.
Jared just told us we own this.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I was a little...
Threw one up.
Oh, because that's a good point, because that came from Ziff Davis from Old EGM.
Sorry, we're talking inside baseball here. Over in the review crew section, the game of the month is Donkey Kong 94.
Oh, cool. I'm glad I got some recognition at the time. I don't remember hearing about it very much.
One of the all-time greats.
You got a 9 3/8. I would have given it 4 10s. But I don't think they don't even seem entirely clear on what this game is.
Because
The highest score from the editor of this issue says... Boy, this sure brings back memories. All the fun of the arcade is here, plus a whole lot more. Donkey Kong has more features, including a save function, cool new cinemas, never-before-seen levels, and color using the Super Game Boy. I can't stress enough how good this game is. On the plain old Game Boy, it's okay. But on the TV, it really rocks. I'm buying a Super Game Boy just for this remake of the old classic.
I don't think they played it.
They don't understand. Yeah. It's not.
I don't think the some new levels thing is really telling the full story.
It's a totally different game. It's a puzzle game platformer.
For 5 minutes and made it through the first two levels of the Donkey Kong arcade. And
they're like, oh, yeah, I remember Donkey Kong.
It's great. It's
nostalgia.
It's an eight. Now on to the other 17 games I'm reviewing this month.
Yeah. We were talking about Nintendo games that you can play with more than four players last week. Here's an ad for the Super Link that allows up to five players.
Is this one more?
Yeah, it's one more.
Well, that really kicks me off because Genesis has one with six.
What was that besides sports games where you're playing five players?
Well, they list some games here.
Bomberman.
All right, you have Bomberman.
Fire Striker. I don't know what that is.
It's not Bomberman.
No.
Lord of the Rings. The Peacekeepers and Secret of Mana.
Well, Lord of the Rings is a three-player game.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're listed as compatible with this.
Interesting.
All right. Here's their review of Super Street Fighter 2. See if they change their review scores. He's got a 6.778.
Oh, harsh.
The lowest score says, I'm getting a little tired of having to buy a new Street Fighter game every year. Sure, this game has four new characters and a nifty tournament mode, but why get this one when you can wait a year for the next one? Super Street Fighter 2 plays the same as before, but the voices are horrible and the graphics need a few touch-ups. Capcom needs to totally redo this game to get my interest back. It's just more of the same.
That was really good.
That was impressive, Sam.
I think this is the first time I've seen this. There's a review of a CDI game in here.
Oh, oh man. Cool.
It's Dragon Slayer.
Dragon
Slayer. Well, that would work really well in the CDI.
They loved it. They gave it 2.8s, 2.7s.
Yeah.
Dragon Slayer is a near exact match to the original coin-op Dragon.
Did I already rant about Dragon Slayer at California Extreme?
What do you mean?
Oh, at California Extreme, they had Dragon Slayer, and when I play it there, it's always this version, which I think is like a harder version, where it's just like everything is completely out of sequence. So you don't cross the drawbridge first and enter the castle and go through it. It's like the first sequence could be like the whirlpool part.
Is it like randomized?
Yeah. And I think there's like maybe a dip switch setting or something that makes it that way. But then I listened to this podcast with the Hello from Magic Tavern crew, which is one of my favorite shows, talking about Dragon's Lair. And they all play that version. They're like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I just wish it was a narrative. And so I think there's like a shuffled version of Dragon's Lair that was like common. It makes people hate it. But it's also a hateable game. I don't want to say that it's. But when I played it, it was always in sequence. And it was like it told this kind of cool story and maybe flipped levels a little bit. But
that's interesting. Well, we should look into that.
Okay.
All right. Here's EGM's hot top 10s. Top 10 two-player simultaneous games. Gunstar Heroes, BattleTech, Pocky and Rocky, Final Fight CD. Yeah, the Super Nintendo version doesn't have two player.
Right.
Smash TV, The Peacekeepers. You can use it with your multi-tap. Zombies Ate My Neighbors, Sunset Riders, Top Hunter. That's a Neo Geo game. And Sonic 3.
That's great. Great
games. Well, all those are good. I kind of interested in Top Hunter now.
Is Pocky and Rocky good? I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
I've never played
it. That's the Americanized version of. Isn't it? That's not Mystical Ninja.
It's not a Goemon game, I don't think.
Super Nintendo.
I played Pocky and Rocky.
editor's top 10, August 94 was Demon's Crest. That's a very cool game. NBA Jam, Super Street Fighter 2. I guess that's the same one. World Heroes 2, Jet, Samurai Showdown, Super Metroid, Fighters History, Dynamite, Saturday Night Slam Masters, Pocky and Rocky 2, and Art of Fighting 2.
Yeah. NBA Jam kind of took a play out of the Street Fighter book. They released a bunch of those too. They had like NBA Jam and JNTE.
Yep.
All that stuff.
And then the reader's top 10 this month was Mortal Kombat 2, Super Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat 2 Arcade, Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition, Street Fighter 2 SNES, Super Star Wars, Mortal Kombat, NBA Jam, NBA Jam Tournament Edition, and Saturday Night Slam Masters.
There it is.
You remember when NBA Jam just had like Bill and Hillary Clinton in it? And
the
like
big head modes.
Like, yeah, just like.
It was super cool.
Weird cheats.
Ed Boon, and all the toasty guys.
This is from Babbage's. The best-selling Super Nintendo game this month was FIFA International Soccer. Genesis was World Series Baseball. And the others aren't very interesting.
Neither were those.
I know, so I decided to stop right there. Later on, they've got a preview of Beyond Oasis on... What are you talking about?
I wanted that RPG so bad.
On Sega Genesis.
When I was a kid.
Very, very cool game. It was supposed to be there Zelda-like on Genesis. Yep. But the preview calls this game The Story of Thor. And I guess that was like a working title for that game. I don't think that's what it was called in Japan.
I played that game for the first time on the Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection. And I played it like straight through and it's so accessible and fun. And I would highly recommend it if you want to go play a retro game that's like Zelda and you just don't want to have to use a FAQ or whatever. And it's great. It's such it's a great game that I wish I had played when I was a kid.
The game definitely, I guess because it's on Genesis, but it should have a higher profile.
Yeah,
now
absolutely.
It does.
It's called Beyond Oasis. Very cool animation, great music. It's a really cool game.
And it's about Thor. Awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that when I played it.
There's a preview of Donkey Kong Country.
Ooh.
And there's some good text in here. It says, the biggest surprise at the summer CES had to be Donkey Kong Country. Using special graphics that were rendered completely by computer, this cart comes alive. The graphics blow away ordinary 16-bit. In fact, they're even better than most 32-bit games. The 32-meg game has Donkey Kong and his adventurous son exploring their island home.
Wait. That's
they're not really. No, exactly.
Ever since Donkey Kong came out in the arcades, Stupid Kong in Japan, everyone has loved this big ape. I want to stress that Donkey Kong is not called Stupid Kong in Japan. That's not a thing.
Not factual.
What did that come from?
Yeah, exactly.
While Mario came away from the game to achieve fame, it seemed like Donkey Kong was forgotten. Donkey Kong Country plays like a Mario game. It has dozens of giant levels, each teeming with hidden places to find. You can even ride on animals. This is the biggest and best Nintendo game ever.
At the time. I would agree with that.
Think
those
so?
Graphics used to matter so much.
Yeah. I mean,
they just used to matter so much.
Donkey Kong Country like single-handedly extended the life of the SNES.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Not single-handedly. Like that in conjunction with some other big RPGs, like it staved off like the PS1 for years.
Well, visually, I mean, that game had a package of everything. Like the visuals were awesome. The music was awesome. I think it was like David Wise. Yeah, exactly. I think it was a Rare composer who does a lot of those. I think he did the Battletoads theme and a bunch of other things like that. But yeah, the music in that game was top notch. Yep. Everybody remembers the Water World. It just had some of the most beautiful music.
And finally, in the very back of the magazine, in their like pop culture section, they have an article on True Lies.
You had to make it to the end,
which is why I guess there was a 2-page spread of True Lies without any explanation.
It's really
in the front of the magazine. The back is a ad for a fighter stick for Sega Genesis and SNES called Fighter Stick SN.
I saw their little tagline:
"Never loan out your stick."
The 90s.
It doesn't even work on sort of a dirty level.
Yeah.
No.
That was August 1994. EGM.
I think that's all the time we have.
We're gonna play 20 questions.
Yeah.
Let's do it. That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions.
Zelda
our suggestion
two.
This
Zelda
week
two
comes
level
from,
up.
I'm glad you guys got that. Yeah. Our suggestion this week comes from Joseph in Covington, Kentucky. Let the questioning begin.
Could this game have appeared in that issue of EGM, the 94 issue of EGM?
No.
Oh.
Could this game have appeared on a system that would have made that guy real mad in that first letter?
Could it have?
Oh, yeah. Couple toss ways.
Like,
here.
You know, later in his life, would he be like, oh, I'm so ticked off that that game is on that system?
I think the answer is no, if I'm understanding what you're asking.
I really want to get this one, guys.
This game was not on a Nintendo system.
Okay, so whatever, the angry guy is just, he's in the clear.
Was this, I feel like if I ask this question, I might be able to figure out a 10-year span. Is this post-2010? Launched originally post-2010?
No.
Okay, so then there's like a 10-year
94 to 2010. Nice, clean window.
No, I mean, I didn't want to, you know, we would have done the same if I asked 2000. So.
This game come out on a optical medium?
Yes.
Okay. Might be Xbox, PlayStation,
you
one
go
or
ahead.
Two. Yeah, let's go. How do I ask the question? Was this a console exclusive?
No, that's five.
We're in trouble here.
Yeah.
We're missing some shots. I don't even know what to do. Like 94 to 2010, not on a Nintendo console, not a console exclusive. I mean, we need to know the era. Was this game released on last generation, like PS3?
No. I see.
Because 2010 encompasses some of that, I guess.
Some of it, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's helpful.
You're
to
right.
Like, is it PS3, Xbox 360 generation?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Nice.
So a later one of those, which is good.
Yeah.
But
what else is it? I mean, it's also in there, maybe?
Earlier one of those.
Oh, yes.
You asked optical distance, and it was yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's not one of those cool downloadable games.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's on multiple systems, but not Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So one of those nice... good-looking 360 PS4 games or a PC game or something like that.
PS3.
I'm going to go again. Was this game developed in America?
Not America.
But not Japan.
By America, I mean the United States.
Not the United States.
Okay.
Just keep burning those questions.
that was the same question. That was a clarifying question.
A qualifier.
Yeah. So maybe it's like Mirror's Edge or something developed in Europe.
Ubisoft.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Does this have 3D graphics?
Yes.
Okay.
First person?
Yeah, that's going to be my question.
No. Wait, I'm sorry. First person, yes.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Is it? Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
We broke Damon.
Yes, it is first person. It's just been a long time since I've
Do you want me to look it up for you? Just tell me the game.
Yes, it is first person.
Okay.
I had to check myself.
First person.
You almost wrecked yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like if we think protagonist here, or a main character.
You can ask if you can play as a lady. Or
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Or an animal.
Yeah, do you play as a human character?
Yes.
Okay.
That's 10.
Is this a Tom Clancy game?
Yes.
Oh, nice, Justin.
This is probably like Splinter Cell or Ghost Recon.
Yeah.
It's probably Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter.
Yeah, 360 would have been Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 1 or 2.
Well, so we can narrow down Tom Clancy. Is this a Ghost Recon game?
No.
Okay.
So there's Rainbow Six.
Yep.
It's probably
Vegas. Yeah.
Is this a Rainbow Six game?
Yes.
There you go.
Which one is it? I didn't play any of those.
So it'd be New Vegas, I think. And then
it's just Vegas.
Sorry.
I'm getting Fallout.
I know. I'm getting some of those mixed up. Yeah, what other Rainbow Six games were out in that era?
I mean, I don't know that franchise that well. I never played them, but there was like just like 1, 2, 3 Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then they spun out from there.
Yeah.
It's probably Vegas.
It probably is.
Does this take place near the Hoover Dam?
Yes.
There you go.
Is it Rainbow Six Vegas?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's great.
Nicely done.
What the heck made you ask if it was a Tom Clancy game instead of a Ubisoft game?
Well, because you said it was first person. I don't know.
The confusion over the first third?
Well, we already knew first person.
Yeah.
Nothing made me ask that. I was just, that was my way of asking if it was a Ubisoft.
But it wasn't a console exclusive either. So those are pretty
popular. A lot of the non-Tom Clancy Ubisoft games appeared on Nintendo consoles. So like Prince of Persia was on Nintendo, and so was Beyond Good and Evil and like the other stuff they were known for.
Where was that developed?
Ubisoft Montreal.
Montreal, yeah.
The only reason the first person question tripped me up is because the feature I remember the most is that you could use the Xbox 360 camera to take a picture of your face and put it on your character. And when you when you snuck up to a wall, then you would, the camera would come out and you'd see your character on the, that way. Yeah. But I think the rest of the time it's in first person.
Yeah. That may be one of those franchises. Again, I haven't played them, but I think they bounce around between perspective.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They used to have like a tactical mode where you could like place, like really choose like what do you want you to make your point of infiltration. And
yeah,
those are really good games.
They were good.
Thank you for the suggestion, Joseph from Covington, Kentucky. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. That's all the time we have today. We have one more episode with CJ next week.
That's right.
Make sure you tune in for that because CJ says he has something planned. So we'll see. But thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, CJ.
Thanks, man.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out. We'll be right back.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.